Liberty Life Assurance, Mr. Dabowski.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Dabowski, and I represent the plaintiff appellant in this case. Bruce Fisher, the plaintiff appellant, as the court is aware from reading the record, is a very highly educated, skilled individual who worked for 5.5 years at Steinrohe as a systems engineer.
Mr. Dabowski, I have a question for you about the plan itself. Because reading both of your briefs, you place a great deal of weight on an interpretation of the mental illness limitation under which the illness has to be exclusively a non-physical, a mental one, before that 24-month limit applies. But then reading the Liberty brief, the word they use throughout is primarily mental. And so that could make a difference on these facts, number one. And number two, since this, everybody seems to agree, this is a plan for which the administrator has discretion. If it's at all ambiguous, don't we need to defer to Liberty's interpretation of it as being one addressing primarily mental restrictions instead of exclusively?
First of all, Your Honor, with respect to the plan and the policy guidance, there is some distinction between the two, and I think the policy guidance is particularly necessary in this case because one could have a psychiatric impairment and then one could have a physical impairment and be disqualified from disability benefits after 2 years. The policy guidance makes it clear that the mental impairment limitation, something on which the insurer has the burden of proof, is only applicable if the disability is due exclusively to the psychiatric impairment.
Now, just to be clear, you're referring to this PPE 13.080.01.0700?
That's correct. And as this court pointed out in the Eggert versus
Cotton, do we have the full text of that in the record?
You do.
Yes, but it was under seal?
It's under seal, Your Honor. In the Eggert case, this court made it very clear that if an insurance company has a guidance or a policy manual, that they have to follow it. They can't decide willy-nilly whether the insurance company is going to follow it sometimes and sometimes they won't. And in fact, when the Department of Labor reissued the ERISA claim regulations in 2002, the accompanying Federal Register pointed that out and said that it would be an abuse of discretion if that policy guidance were not complied with. Why this case involves an abuse of discretion is because Liberty refused to consider the key evidence that Mr. Fisher presented that could not be explained by the mental impairment limitation.
Suppose that evidence showed that his physical, that the physical damage in his brain was the result of this childhood encephalitis. There's some testimony to that. Does that matter at all, what it comes from?
I think it makes a huge difference. As we pointed out in our briefs, it was not incumbent on the plaintiff under the ERISA law to establish a precise etiology for his condition. And in fact, there are many situations in which medical science cannot come to that conclusion. But what Mr. Fisher did establish conclusively was that he was presenting with symptoms that Liberty refused to look at. The only consideration that was ultimately given to Mr. Fisher's physical condition was the review that was done by Dr. Truchelet. And while Dr. Truchelet acknowledged that Mr. Fisher had some of these symptoms that Dr. Grujic, the treating neurologist, had reported, he then ignored it. He only focused on the diabetes and on the colitis. That's like saying that somebody with a heart condition and a back condition might be remediated from one of those conditions, but then you completely ignore the other.
Well, are those the physical things? I thought that your primary emphasis was either the doctors who thought he might be suffering from some form of dementia and the question, maybe some form of seizure disorder. but you're going with the diabetes and all the rest of those things?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
Okay, you're not.
I mean, those conditions alone we can acknowledge would not be disabling, but they're all part and parcel of Mr. Fisher's makeup.
What I don't understand is this. There's the exclusion, or the 24-month is for mental illness, right?
Correct.
Well, all mental illnesses have physical causes, obviously, right? Otherwise, you'd be in some spirit realm, right, where some illnesses are caused by changes in the body and others come from the sky, right?
Well, that's really...
Why does it matter what his brain looks like?
That's really the point here.
He has a mental illness. He has a mental illness.
No. And that's really the problem with the whole metaphysics of trying to analyze this case. If somebody has a brain tumor and that causes them to behave erratically, one could say that that's a mental impairment. But one could also say that the diagnosis is brain tumor and should be paid to age 65.
What is retardation? Isn't that mental illness?
Mental retardation could be mental illness. It could be due to some physical cause.
Well, it's got to be due to a physical cause. How can you be retarded without a physical cause?
Your Honor, I'm not a physician, and I don't think it's the place for me or for this court to try to play doctor in analyzing this case.
Well, unfortunately, that's what the ERISA plan has to do. It has to somehow separate mental illnesses from some category of mental illnesses which have some sort of gross physical manifestations, or right?
And that's where the policy guidance comes in. The whole point of the policy guidance is to distinguish between a condition such as depression.
What if a person had, you know, so typical schizophrenia, the way it surfaces in teenagers, young adults, you have some, you know, slight traumatic incident. You know, maybe you're shaken up in an automobile accident. Next thing you know, you're mad. You're crazy. That's how it works. But now, would your position be that was not a mental illness because it had been precipitated by some physical act?
If you would allow me to alter your analogy just
no,
a little bit.
I can let you alter my analogy. Use your own analogy. This is my analogy.
Well, the concern that I have with your analogy is the
audience. Concern. You answer my question, then you can make any qualifications that you want.
If the schizophrenia resulted from an auto accident, it would not be limited.
That's not right, because many of these mental illnesses, they're sparked by some event. Right. I mean, schizophrenia is a classic mental illness. They're not making an exception for schizophrenia. There's something really fishy, and it can't be that you can go back and look for the precipitating incident that made you schizophrenic.
But if somebody has schizophrenia and they also have a brain tumor, and they are disabled from both of those conditions, the mental impairment limitation would not be applicable.
Yes, but we don't know whether this person, your client, whether his mental problems result from the fact that he's depressed, which obviously has a physical cause, but apparently not the sort of physical cause we look at. How do we distinguish between that and whether it's due to some abnormalities on a brain scan?
That's really the rub.
That's a hard question. Well, is their resolution of it unreasonable?
It is unreasonable, we contend, because first of all, they have the burden.
Some of the doctors think, you know, it's depression because he's very smart, and others think, no, it's these abnormalities in the brain, or maybe it's, you know, the encephalitis.
And where Liberty failed was that they never evaluated the encephalitis. And considering the conflict of interest under which they're operating,
So your view is, if it's the result of this early childhood encephalitis, then it's not within the 24 months. Is that right?
It's a physical illness. It's a neurological disorder.
Consider the encephalitis at all? Is that your argument?
They never considered the encephalitis separate from the depression. They kept saying depression, depression, depression. They ignored the PET scan. They ignored the MRI scan. They ignored Dr. Grujic's opinion. They ignored Dr. Grujic's citations.
Now you're going beyond what you were saying about encephalitis. You're saying they ignored every physical cause?
Not every physical cause, Your Honor, but they ignored the key cause that was being suggested by Dr. Grujic and by Dr. Greendale.
Encephalitis?
I don't know what it is. It's,
well, you said the key cause. What is the key cause?
It ignored? Might be encephalitis.
Well, look, you can't have the key cause and then give me three causes, right?
I can't answer the question. I'm not a physician and I'm not God. I cannot pinpoint the exact cause. None of the doctors could pinpoint the exact cause.
When you say cause, you mean of the damage to the brain showing up on the PET scan and the MRI.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
But that's not the issue. The issue is the relation between the abnormality that is detected and the mental and his inability to work.
If it's a neurological disorder, it's not subject to the limitation. If it's a mental disorder, it is subject to the limitation.
Okay.
Liberty refused to consider that it could be a neurological disorder. That's where they abused their discretion.
You mean they said it was impossible that his symptoms could be due to a neurological disorder? What?
Never looked at it. They didn't say it was impossible, but they ignored a key aspect of the problem. That's where the abuse of discretion comes in.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Dubofsky. Ms. Weinberg?
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sarah Weinberg, and I am the attorney for the appellee's Liberty Life Assurance Company and also Stein Rowe's Capital Long-Term Disability Plan. And I'd like to address first some issues raised by the panel in questioning my colleague regarding the Liberty's review and its internal documents. This case involves...
Well, his argument is that Liberty did not consider the possibility of a neurological disease. So.
And that's incorrect. Liberty did consider it. Liberty, this case involves an individual who applied for a long-term disability benefit.
Yes, I know. We know that. So where did it consider this?
Well, it considered it initially. It reviewed it. It had eight different medical professionals review his file.
But the point is, I mean, it's not the easiest thing to distinguish a neurological disorder from a psychiatric disorder. And for all I know, in 50 years, we won't even recognize that there's any rational difference between the two. But here we are. This is the plan you have. And so surely the only medical professionals we need to be concerned with are those who would be qualified to draw that distinction. I assume neurologists or psychiatrists.
That's correct.
We can delete some of the people who looked at this file.
Not necessarily, because ERISA doesn't require that it has to be someone of the same level of medical profession reviewing as what the treating physicians have put forward. It was neuropsychologists, it was psychiatrists, it was internists.
So you can have a gynecologist opining as to whether Mr. Fitcher had a neurological or a psychiatric disorder?
Well, Liberty didn't have a gynecologist.
I know they didn't. They had internists who are general...
They had one internist who was involved in evaluating whether his physical condition, and that was on the appeal, that was Dr. Truchlet. And when they appealed the determination that it was limited to the 24 months, that Liberty, based on its internal guidelines, now it had, here's the psychological issue that he was limited to, now they're saying it's related to some sort of neurological issue or physical issue. They did, in accordance with their guidelines, had dual review, a dual peer review. Dr. Truchlet looked at the physical, and Dr. Johnston looked at the neurological. And
what about Dr. Rothke, who notes that the testing can't rule out the presence of a medical or neurological condition, and the explanation for what everybody seems to agree are abnormal results in the PET scan, the MRI.
Well, Dr. Rothke, who did an independent exam of Fisher in 2004, was a clinical neuropsychologist, and he looked at it from, although there were abnormalities in the PET scan, this individual did not present with any cognitive changes. His functioning was at the same level it had been when he had his first evaluation in 2001. It was the same in 2003. There was nothing showing progressive dementing condition. His concentration was still all there. His recall and memory was great. He had comparable scores in May of 2003 that went back to what his scores were in November of 2001, where they said this condition stemmed from, where he was started to be evaluated for neurological issues by his treating physicians. So he was a cognitively intact gentleman, according to Dr. Rothke. And he saw that he prominently presented with mild depression, and he didn't see any sort of neurological basis for extending the limitations. And then Dr. Kleindorfer also followed along with the same.
Did you think it was impossible that a neurological, by which I suppose you mean some physical issue with the brain, that a neurological condition could present itself as major depression?
No. I think that he looked at it as, at this point, wasn't presenting with some sort of neurological condition. He wasn't presenting with a dementia. There was nothing objective about the testing that showed, although there may have been an abnormality in the PET scan, there was nothing objective.
But I think you just maybe answered my question, yes, that he doesn't think that there can be a physical cause that shows up as depression.
Yes.
So if you have depression, then no matter how physically messed up your brain is, it can't count.
It can't count as a physical limitation?
As a physical limitation for purposes of this 24-month
plan. It cannot count based on the plan. Based on the way the plan is read, it's limited to the 24 months because it's a mental condition.
Because depression, no matter how caused, is considered mental. Even if you could show, you know, that only people with damage in this particular section of the brain wind up as depressed.
That's correct.
So what about Alzheimer's disease? Is that considered a mental illness or a physical?
Under the terms of this plan,
yeah.
It would depend on how it's presented. I think if there was evidence of Alzheimer's, it could be considered beyond the mental illness limitation, but he didn't present with that. There was nothing conclusive.
Why is that different from the depression example we just gave?
Well, it could show cognitive loss of function that could show an organic brain disorder. But in this case, he didn't have a cognitive loss of function. He was functioning better 2 years later than when he went out on disability. And so Alzheimer's didn't appear in this situation, and it wouldn't have affected.
I'm just curious how these different things are classified. What is mental illness? Something that's in a list of mental illnesses? Is that what it is?
Or? No, it talks about if it's coming from a purely psychological. If it's coming from
that's
a psychological.
It's so unscientific, right? Everything comes from physical. Everything is physical in the body.
But it's looking at how the doctors reviewed it, and based on the language of the plan, if it's reviewed, they had the discretionary authority, based on what was in the record, to make the determination that they did, that this individual presented with depression and that he was limited by the 24 months. They had the discretion, and as the district court correctly concluded, that their decision was reasonable. They had eight physicians or psychologists or neuropsychologists evaluate him. They reviewed all of the opinions that were presented by Mr. Fisher's treating physicians.
For example, his side of the case, his experts, did anyone say, well, you could have some visible brain defect. It could cause a person to be depressed, and then it could cause and as a result of the depression, you know, he couldn't work, he couldn't think straight. Anything like that?
Well,
it's related to Judge Wood's question, you know.
His two treaters, Dr. George Miller and Dr. Grushnick, looked at it and said both that he has problems with memory and he has problems with memory encoding, and he has problems with forgetfulness. But there was nothing that showed that this could be attributable to a physical condition. The records were inconclusive. Dr. Grushnick specifically said that his clinical presentation was inconsistent with the diagnosis of Alzheimer's.
What is Grushnick's specialty?
He is a neurologist.
Who's the specialty of Dr. Greendale?
George Miller?
Greendale with the supplement that was...
Dr. Greendale was... I don't recall what his specialty was. But they all looked at it and said... And they all looked at it and said that he was having some memory loss, he was having some change, but when it was reviewed by the Liberty people, they didn't see the cognitive change in his memory. He was actually performing better, and they limited it to the 24 months. It was reasonable based on the deferential standard, and as the court properly concluded, the decision should be upheld, affirmed.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Weinberg.
Thank you.
Mr. Dabowski, is he having any time? You can have. Do you want a minute? Sure.
Dementia is not the only neurological order. Mr. Fisher became disabled because he was losing his balance, and he was experiencing episodes lasting up to 2 hours of what he described as zoning out with urinary incontinence. These are not psychiatric symptoms. The only neurological brain disorder that Liberty looked at was dementia. They never considered that Mr. Fisher could be disabled on account of these symptoms, falling down, zoning out, urinary incontinence, even though they knew.
Which doctor, just remind me, who testifies to these symptoms?
Dr. Grushnick documents them. By the way, Dr. Greendale is a psychiatrist, Your Honor. Liberty knew in 2004 that there was physical verification for these symptoms because they had the records of the shoulder separation for which Mr. Fisher was operated on because he had fallen out of a chair. Yet Liberty never considered that aspect of the claim. They looked at this claim through tunnel vision. They abused their discretion. They acted under a conflict of interest. In this case, should be reversed.
Okay, thank you very much to both.